Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Welcome back to the third part of my interview with Dr. Rahayel Draizma. She is a specialist in working with dogs and horses. She's been doing that since 2002. She primarily specializes in working with horses now, with her goal to help them thrive in a human world. She does this in two ways, and she has a book on each part of her strategy. The first is she needs to assess how the horse is doing, what state they are in, and how they are trying to manage currently in their environment. She has a rubric of calming signals or appeasement behaviors that she uses to do this. And her book, Language Signs and Calming Signals of Horses, illustrates this for readers so that we can understand and use her strategies for this. Her second book, Scent Work for Horses, has exercises and ways to help the horse kind of get back to a more regulated state. And we explained that in the last episode. She was discussing how her work and the book by the same title of Scent Work for Horses helps change the horse's motivation from being externally motivated, where they feel the pressure constantly, to more of a balance where they can find internal motivation to want to interact. In this last part of our talk together, we explore some modern myths of how horses do display some common signals, so that we'll lead off with that here in a second. And I also want to mention that at the very end of this episode, we highlight that we have some plans to continue working together this year, and I'm thrilled to announce that the webinar she's going to mention at the very end has been scheduled. And Connection Therapy will be hosting a webinar with Dr. Draizma on December 8th of 2025 at 12:30 Central. And we're also going to do a book club of her book, Language Signs and Calming Signals, that starts in September and has some special gifts associated with it, which I will provide more detail on at the end of the episode. Thank you. Enjoy. So I thought we could debunk one of the very popular myths here that I know most listeners would be curious about. And then I'll ask you a couple more questions after that. So chewing as submissiveness or chewing as thinking. I know from the work that I do in equine assisted services, it's commonly understood, and I think you're about to help us understand incorrectly, that it's commonly understood that chewing as thinking is the only option. And for myself, and I'm sure many people who have been around horses, there are times that just seems like chewing might be signaling something else, and do help us in the course learn there's pretty distinct differences what chewing could mean from the horse.
And I think first the shortest answer about a chewing horse is a submissive horse. I mean, we can open a whole new podcast about dominance, yep, and submissiveness and linear hierarchy. So I think we don't go into that. So to me, I think if you follow my lectures, you will rarely hear me say dominant behavior or submissive behavior, because I find humans have a lot of feelings and ideas with the words dominant and submissive. And if one horse shows dominant behavior, it all of a sudden is a dominant horse. So it helps me enormous also to help the horse in all his complexity and all its variables to ask myself at a moment, what is important for the horse? What is important for the horse when you're feeding? What is important for the horse when there is sun? What is important for the horse when it starts raining? Not only say it's a dominant horse, she wants everything. No, what is important for her when it's feeding time? What is important when the water is gone? What is because in groups of horses, in our domesticated horses, they all may have different priorities on different moments of the day. So that's firstly. So if we would translate dominant behavior with proactive behavior and submissive as non-proactive behavior and maybe de-escalating behavior, what I find in my library of 800 films, and many of them have interactions with horses, and that may be horses that know each other well or horses that are new to each other and introduced to each other, that the so-called submissive choose, but the so-called dominant that shows proactive behavior also choose. So it's a short answer because I see them do it both in both roles and not only one. So that is the shortest answer I could say. So to me, the chewing is a way for a horse to try to self-regulate, to calm the other, to calm himself. Whether the horse succeeds, that's another question. Because sometimes the situation is so difficult for the horse that you can see him make appeasement signals or calming signals. And if the situation is of that matter that the signals help and calm him, then it's perfect. But sometimes it's so difficult. For instance, a horse with separation anxiety and he's tied in the stable, and that is too hard for him. And he will not, by standing there, learn that it is okay, not feeling comfortable. Then that horse shows stress signals. He shows, may show displacement activity. He may show calming signals. It's all in the mix. He feels an underlying tension, nostrils round, eyes round, mouth very tight, clenched, lengthened upper lip. He might start biting himself. He might start manuring. He might show chewing. He might show a seesaw lowering, the calming signals. So he tries to calm himself, but because the situation is too hard and he's being tight, it does not work. So that is the first part. And the second part is a chewing horse is a thinking horse. Well, if I turn it around and we do it the other way, does that also mean we cannot think if we don't chew?
Right.
I mean, to me, it's in a way such a funny, fu such a strange saying. Because if we look at brains, there's always activity. To me, you cannot pinpoint it alone to chewing. Before the chewing, there's learning. There are emotions. During, after. And I do think the chewing is a thinking horse comes from, and it stems from the time where, and maybe it started also with the work of Monty Roberts, that to my knowledge, to my understanding, with reading horse books during the decades, was the first to start look, or first, I cannot say first, because there are obviously always, people around that might have said the same. But for me, let's keep it more personal to keep it right. He was one of the first that tried to look at signals and communication and try to pinpoint it. And to me, a chewing horse is a thinking horse is a quite an old saying. And in time, we got to know more about horses. We got to know about more about brain. There are more tests being done also with humans, other mammals. So I think it's a saying that keeps being pushed up, but it's just not valid anymore. So to me also, sometimes I see a film where a horse is completely relaxed in his comfort zone. The rider starts to pull at the bit left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right to flex it. The horse chews and the flexing stops. And he says, now I haven't to think. In my thinking, I go, wow, you have a completely relaxed horse. You, well, I don't know how much the horse likes to be flexing, but you do something to him. He shows a calming signal to calm himself, to calm you, to get rid of, to go from that small spurt of tension to calm again. And then you think you did a good job. And I think to myself, why provoke it? So to me, it's very, very strange to do that. I also think, with where did that came from? There are some studies with humans that when humans chew on a hard object or chewing gum, their memory is a bit better for 30 minutes. And in that aspect, there was also, at least in the Netherlands, some articles where they said, actually, we should give elderly no yogurt in the elderly homes, but something to chew on so they activate their brain a bit more. So there's more blood flow and more oxygen with chewing. But that is chewing with something in the mouth. It's not empty chewing. And also, it doesn't need to be only chewing. It can be every movement. It can also be arm movement. It can also be neck movement. It can also be. So it has to do with more blood flow, and that it gives more oxygen in the brain. So to me, I would never provoke it for thinking, because they are such smart animals. We know that. They can think, they can have solutions, they can have memories, they can have feelings. So it's not only to do with, they only think when they chew. To left to right, so I hope it still makes sense and is an answer.
I believe so. It does. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Just actually, two more questions. I wanted to maybe illustrate for listeners my experience of your work the last few days to kind of
Yes.
really give
Nice.
a grounded example. And so, because for me, it really highlights why learning calming signals improves our relationships with horses. So, the idea being that even across species, horses can read our calming signals, much like they can read their own inside of the horse species signals. Like you mentioned, turning the head away is one thing that all variety of species do in the way that we calm. So just taking that one, for example, I was lucky to be given the opportunity to be in the round pen, or sorry, in a small arena this weekend, and we were working with a horse named Jadir, and Rachel helped me understand. So in case it's not clear for members on the podcast, I think it is by now, but I always want horses to be closer to me. It's like ever since I was eight, there's something that's in me always wants to be closer to horses. So I had this experience where I was in the round, or sorry, the arena, and wishing that Jadir would come up to me. And Rachel was coaching me from the other side. And what was uncanny is I, and you can correct me if I'm remembering it the wrong way, but I shifted my weight subtly. I changed my shoulders very subtly. I did a slight movement with my hand and I looked, and all that was pretty good. And sometimes he at least took interest. But when I turned my head is when he walked up. And so we tested it and we tested it again, and she demonstrated it. And this horse, who had up to that point been much more interested in something else in the arena, took interest in me and came up, you know, to be closer, petting and just nearby. And that was fascinating because, like I say, anytime I'm in an arena, I'm hoping the horse comes up. And I didn't know that I was doing small signals that actually kept him away. And so, one thing I learned from you is that you not only observe horses extremely well, you observe people too. And so, you helped me understand that small, teeny little shifts in my own body language could do what I had been hoping, which is I could have a closer interaction with Jadir.
It's beautiful, isn't it? And as you say, it's so now I can imagine people now go to the arena and do a head turn and go like, oh, it
Right.
doesn't work.
Yeah.
But there were, as you say, there were in the body language a few things that you go, oh, maybe someone is splitting, or someone for that horse is a bit, just a little bit too much weight towards the horse, or too frontally. And it's not frontal, but a little bit too much. And the calming signal, as you say, was the opening that the horse say, oh, you don't want a conflict. You're polite. Now I can come. Now it's safe enough for that horse. Yeah, it was beautiful to see. I was happy to give that experience. Yeah. And it, as you say, it is, you can do it with dogs, with cats, with horses, and develop an own language, because they do respond to calming signals, and we can use them to improve our relationship and the communication we have, yeah, with them. Yeah.
Yeah, and for many people that I work with in particular who want badly to come back into relationship with others, sometimes people like starting with animal-assisted therapy or they're working with me in session individually. It was so striking that, as somebody who studies this and who's curious about this, there were still ways that I could improve my own somatic display, because I feel like my thinking, my emotions were all oriented toward relationship, but something about my body language could be slightly shifted. And all of a sudden, the other being, in this case, Jadir, a very welcoming horse, could read me more consistently and more fully and realize that was my intention. And that made a huge difference for me. And again, thank you for the
Yeah. Oh, my
training.
pleasure. Yeah, it's and in a way, though, and that's why I say it feels like magic, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah.
And in a way, it's not magic, because we can pinpoint it, we can repeat it, and it happens every time. But it feels like magic. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah. Especially
yeah,
when you've been trying so hard that all of a
yeah,
sudden it works.
yeah, yeah,
So the last question I
yeah.
have for you is, you and I were talking through the course that you speak multiple languages better than I do, but I do have a curiosity about languages, and we were kind of having fun with the ways different phrases come out
Yeah.
between English and Dutch. And one
Yeah.
thing caught my eye, and that was that when in English we say that we have an open mind, in Dutch, I think you mentioned that you say it translates to open gaze.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Yeah,
I
true.
was curious your thoughts on that, because I spend a lot of time thinking about eye contact and eye movements and things as being informative. And so that versus open mind versus open gaze distinction, I was just curious if you have any thoughts on what how that came into be in Dutch.
Well, oh gosh, I should have looked it up. I should have looked it up
Oh, that's
to
okay.
see where it stems from. I do think to have an for the Dutch listeners, I don't know if there are. Oh, what I meant was an open blik hebben, or an open vizier. But we talked about open blik, so that's an open gaze, open eye gaze. I think it does mean that you. It does mean that you have to be open for something that is different than is in your nature or in your normal patterns. So there is some friction there, or friction, and it might be very, very slight, but you think you know the world, and all of a sudden there's something new, and then we ask you to have an open, you would say mind, but we have an open gaze. So I think the underlying message is the same, like you have to be open for something that is new in your environment. But the open gaze, I also do like, because it starts with looking, and looking with an open gaze, but also with an open mind. So it's almost like you have to be, your body needs to be, because you can also look at something with the body going backwards, right? Your eyes are open, but you're leaning backwards. You have your arms crossed, and you go, oh, it's nothing. I don't even want to see it while you're looking. And the open gaze, I hope that at least we talked about it, like, an open soft body language, and trying to see, trying to be curious. So I think it's beautiful in Dutch that it also starts with something from the body that changes, that might influence the mind as well. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So, if people want to, like myself, follow what you're up to and connect with you and more of your work, where would you like them to locate you? Online or?
Yeah, well, of course, my website, it's calmingsignalsofhorses.com. If you type in scentworkforhorses.com or my name, racheldreisma.com, and I have to say it in Dutch, maybe
Please.
racheldreisma.com. Yeah, I
Thank
said
you.
it quickly. But
Maybe you could say it one more time.
okay, racheldreisma.
Thank you.
Different, right? But I do, I mean, even in Dutch, it's a very unpractical name. So I listen to all variations, and Rachel is a very nice one. And so my website is one, Facebook page is one. I have a Facebook page that is called by my first and last name, Rachel Dreisma, and Calming Signals and Scent Work and Horses is the other one. Instagram I have, Scent Work for Horses, Economic Signals, but I'm not that active on Instagram, so that betrays my age because my children are very active on Instagram. Yes, and do know that there are nice things coming up, and also for us in December, right?
Yes, we have some planned activities with Rachel throughout the year, and we're going to look to schedule a webinar with her in December. So more details shortly to come out on that, but planning for early December.
That wonderful.
Yep. Okay, well, I think unless you have anything else you want people to know, okay. Well, thank you so much for the course. Thank you for your time today. And it's just really been a privilege to learn from you.
Thank you so much, Brenda. It was a privilege to get to know you, and thank you so much for the opportunity. And I hope to inspire people and to get them into the calming signals and the scent work, because there's a lot to gain, and your horse will love it. Both. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, as you just heard, she has so much expertise to share. And so we have some exciting ways we're going to keep learning from her this year. Connection Therapy is going to host a webinar, an online webinar with her on December 8th at 12:30 Central, which is 7:30 p.m. for her. And it's a 2-hour webinar, and the first hour is going to be open to the general public, so we welcome your attendance. And the second hour is reserved for the members who would like to join our book club, such that in that second hour, we can all ask direct questions and learn more specifics from her. So if you'd like to join the book club, there is a link in the show notes. And we start in September, and we're gonna send you her book and some gifts, and also offer that the second hour of our time with her on December 8th is a gift of her time to you for being part of the book club and our interest in providing you an opportunity to learn a lot from her expertise. So please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, or the show notes for more details on those. And also, we have her information listed in the show notes as well if you'd like to follow her work. She's doing a lot of great things this year. Her work, as you can hear why, has really taken hold in many industries. And one reason we booked with her in December is that was the first time she's available. So she's got many avenues to get her important work out into the world. And I just feel so lucky and excited to be able to learn from her. And I hope you will join me in doing so. Looking forward to it. Thanks. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time. This is so interesting, right? I hope so. I think so. And in case you're in a similar spot to me that you would like to keep learning, I want to let you know that I'm starting a book club about Dr. Jaizma's work. It starts in September. We'll be reading her book, Language Signs and Calming Signals of Horses, the one that we talked mostly about in this episode. We'll meet once a month, and then she has agreed also to do a final webinar for us overall, and it'll have a specific section for book club members. So we'll meet in September, October, and November to read her book together. And then she'll join us for a webinar in December. The webinar, as I say, will be widely available, so look for details about that. And if you're interested in joining the book club, there'll be a special part of the time with her that's just for book club members. If you'd like to learn more about her work with me, I hope you'll consider joining this book club. There's a link in the show notes with more information, or as always, we have details on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. Thanks.